Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening and or good morning, and welcome to another edition of the best in live overnight talk radio across this great land of ours and a bit beyond, actually. From the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands in the west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Great to be here with you. Now I've lost another award. The U.S. Television and Radio Fan Association, based in Monroe, North Carolina, comprised of 1,743 females throughout the U.S., selected nationally syndicated Talk America host Mike Siegel, congratulations Mike, as the winner for Sexiest Voice in America. Other nominees announced July 27th were Art Bell, Don Imus, Gordon Liddy, and Bruce Williams. Annie Reagan, president of the organization, revealed that Art Bell placed second, number two, followed by Don Imus, third, Bruce Williams, fourth, Gordon Liddy, fifth. So, there you go. Struck down again. Well, good evening, everybody. With reference to my opening remark in yesterday's program, there is a family emergency going on in my family right now, and it may be necessary at some point for me to leave the program tonight, or perhaps not, hopefully not, but I do want to warn you of that possibility. You're aware of the ongoing problems. I'm debating whether to make public what's causing all this or not. We'll see. Coming up for you shortly is Linda Moulton Howe, Attention Canada. There has been a crop circle. It's a real doozy up in Canada. I do have a diagram of it. No aerial photographs yet, but a diagram supplied by Linda. And you're going to get to hear the farmer in whose field this was perpetrated. Notice the word I used, perpetrated. In the next hour, Betty Eady will be here, who has just written a book called The Ripple Effect. She, of course, had a number one New York Times bestseller, Embraced by the Light, and now The Ripple Effect, and so Betty Eady will be here. Tomorrow night, Gordon Cooper, the astronaut, will be here. Looking forward to, boy, am I looking forward to that. Otherwise, East Timor, as you know, in a terrible crisis, hundreds being slaughtered in the streets. The UN, trying to debate whether it's going to stay or go, wants really Australian troops to come in and take care of biz in a regional way. In Moscow, a massive explosion shattered a nine-story apartment building in Moscow early Thursday, destroying scores of apartments, actually, and leaving 14 dead, more trapped in the rubble. They don't rule out the possibility that it was a bomb attack there. They're looking into it. Danforth will head the Waco inquiry coming up. He has agreed now to head that inquiry. So, all of that said, in a moment, we will go to Linda Moulton Howe, and there's a lot going on out there. So, we'll talk to her about that. And, as I said, if you would like to see a formation, a diagram of a formation. Now, it's kind of like modern art. But when I looked at this one, which is up on my website by Linda Moulton Howe's name, I thought planetary alignment. Boy, that looks like a planetary alignment if I've ever seen one. But that's me, and you may interpret it in a very different way. But it looks like what was going on in England has now moved across the Atlantic to Canada.
Now we take you back to the night of September 8th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Off to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She's a science advisor, reporter and has been for years for Coast to Coast AM, and of course does a weekly report on Dreamland. She has won any number of awards for her environmental programs. She produced some environmental programs back when people weren't really thinking a whole lot about the environment. They sure are now. So she does a great deal for the show. Here is Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, welcome.
Hi, Art.
Hi there.
Well, when I talked with you on Coast the end of July from Wiltshire, England, about all the crop formations there, none of us researching the mystery realized that at the same July time back in Canada, two large formations were discovered in wheat fields outside Hagersville, Ontario. Hagersville is southwest of Toronto on the north side of Lake Erie. The largest was a 303-foot pictogram made up of circles, corridors, and rings, including what looks like a human stick figure above a circle. The other smaller pictogram in another field was about 75 feet long, made up of several corridors connecting two circles. Farmer Larry Powell was renting the land from owner Clint King. Beginning July 11th, Powell started swathing the fields, cutting the wheat down to about 8 inches above the ground for harvest. He doesn't remember the precise day after July 11th, but he came upon the circles and corridors and became very angry, assuming that vandals had been in his wheat. So he drove his swathing machine over the formation. He didn't tell anyone until around July 22nd when the farm's owner, Clint King, was shown the odd designs. Since much of the wheat was laid flat to the ground beneath the 8-inch stubble, aerial and ground photographs still show some of the pictograms, and you can see both drawings and photographs at my website, earthfiles.com, starting tomorrow as refined drawings, surveys and photographs are coming in as we speak tonight. So bookmark earthfiles.com to keep up with this unfolding story in which there are new developments daily so far. Now, the farm owner, Clint King, who also founded the First Nations Environmental Network for North American Indian tribes living in Canada, told me that he was stunned to see wheat stems delicately braided and interwoven with other braids of wheat. Here is Clint King.
Okay.
You know how you see weaving in for fabric to make some kind of material?
Right.
That's how interwoven it was. It wasn't just simply laid down flat. It was actually woven. And it was really clear in the middle of the largest circle. There was a crisscross pattern like a medicine wheel. And right in the middle, it was very complex weaving going on there.
And when you say braid and interwoven, is it accurate for us to think about the braid of a girl's hair?
Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like. Yeah.
So that the wheat was actually braided, one over one stem, another over another stem, and so forth?
Yeah, that's how it was.
Have you in your life ever seen anything like this before?
No, this has really surprised me. I never thought I'd ever see anything like this.
And upon walking through and examining all of these physical complexities and the actual braiding and weaving and the repetitions in numbers, what kind of thought have you been left with about what intelligence made this?
A force that has a very high intelligence and skill, greater than anything a person would have, simply because the wheat wasn't broken. And I'm just struck with wonder. Besides, at how incredibly beautiful it looks, and yet so simple. I'm just struck by that. You know, just to see wheat laying over in a field, one strand at a time, and then to look at them all together.
Wow.
To show such a stunning message, so simple yet so complex.
Do you think any human could have done that?
No, no, it was too complex for a person to have done. They might have been able to draw it, on a graph or on a piece of paper. But even that would have taken a lot of skill just to draw it out.
I talked with one of Clint King's neighbors who lives about a mile south of the fields containing the pictograms. Carl Saltz said one night in the middle of July he was up reading around 3 a.m. He looked out the window toward King's farm and saw a glowing object, quote, the color of a red traffic light, unquote, moving up and down like an elevator above the trees between his property and Clint King's.
Like, I'm looking at the back window now and over the tree lines. These trees are quite tall. They'd have to be probably 50, 60 feet in the air, and that object from where I'm looking at now would have to be pretty big. Like, I would imagine at least, I don't know, 20 feet, 20 to 30 feet in height.
Hmm.
So,
And was it circular or oval?
No, I really couldn't distinguish it. It's sort of like a resonant glow around this object, whatever it was. And it was like a light bulb almost. It was just like red light bulb going up and down again.
And so it went up and down again like an elevator.
Yes, and then it hovered around the tree line, just like going across the tree line.
So it moved horizontally.
Yes, but I thought the object was pretty large because I'm looking right at the trees now, and now to see it in the daytime, and actually, I mean, to put my fingers up against the window here and put the tree line, the object must have been pretty big.
Would if you extend your hand at an arm's length distance like you're doing,
yes,
and you compare it against the trees,
mm-hmm,
how would you compare?
Well, if you put your fingers up against a window, now I would say it would be about the width of my two fingers, which is almost the width of a canopy of one of these large trees I can see now. So
okay.
It would have to be at least maybe 20 feet wide, too.
So it's the width of two of your fingers,
yes, yes,
and at approximately a mile.
Yes. Yeah.
That is pretty big.
That is large, yes, it is. Like, it almost covers the top of the canopy of that tree that I'm looking at right now. It went over the canopy of the tree and then came back and then started going down again. And then it went down and I didn't see the light again.
And going down behind the trees, what would be behind those trees?
Well, right behind those trees would be Clint's field.
I also talked with the editor of the Turtle Island News in Oshawekan, Ontario, who was one of the first people to photograph these formations. She said that at some of the circle centers in Clint King's wheat, she could see signs of scorching as if the plants had been subjected to heat. She also confirmed that the braiding and weaving in the pictograms were very detailed, as Clint King has described. Around that same time, on July 15th, in Montebello, Quebec, a very large and very odd formation resembling letters and character symbols was discovered in a wheat field northeast of Ottawa, near the Ottawa River. Some people thought it must be a hoax, but others who actually saw the lay of the plants reported that the strange hieroglyph might actually be genuinely mysterious. If so, no one can understand the obscure message, a common complaint about crop formations. You can see a diagram of the symbols at earthfiles.com drawn by Paul Anderson, director of Circles Phenomenon Research in Canada. On August 7th, a few days before the total solar eclipse, a 100-foot diameter circle was found pressed firmly into grass in British Columbia near the Yukon border. The very remote location at Dees Lake was so difficult to get to and not easy to see from anywhere, so many people said, well, what was the point of this? And why at the same time, over the British Columbia border in Whitefish, Montana on August 6th, did someone put a ring about the size of a football field in wheat not far from Highway 40? The ring was divided into four quadrants that projected outward with trident-like forks beyond the perimeter of the ring. It closely resembles a Native American symbol for the sun. Last year in 1998, at about the same time, an almost identical shaped but smaller sun symbol was discovered in a wheat field only 5 miles from this 1999 ring. And if it hadn't been for the sharp eye and perseverance of Whitefish resident Melody Watts, maybe no one would ever have known. when she contacted local media and airports about photographing the ring, no one was even interested. So far, Melody is the only person who has provided aerial and ground photographs of the 1999 ring formation. If there is anyone else out there listening who might have taken photographs while flying over Whitefish, Montana around August 6th when it was fresh, please contact me at either my email address, earthfiles@earthfiles.com, or my fax, 215-491-9842. Melody and I both would like to see if we could find fresh photos. And again, my email address is earthfiles@earthfiles.com, or my fax is 215-491-9842.
Listening to the Canadians, Linda, and the British talk about crop circles, Canadians, for example, are pretty laid back. You know, they're just easygoing people. And when you listen to them, somehow there's even more impact from them in their quiet way. In assessing them, it's of greater impact. We Americans were pretty excitable.
Yes, that's true. Well, now we're going to hear Melody, who lives up in Whitefish, Montana, describe how the plants are laid down in this amazing ring. Here is Melody Watts.
All right.
In the ring itself, half of the ring was going clockwise, and the other half right next to it in the same 6 feet or eight, whatever, was going the opposite direction. The wheat was laid clockwise, and right next to it, it was laid counterclockwise.
So the ring,
it's a complete circle.
So the ring itself was made up of two completely opposite flows of wheat.
Yes, it was amazing. And also the forks and the lines going through, the forks and all the lines were going directly towards the middle. There was no, they were pulled into the middle from the outside,
the
forks and the straight lines.
So the plants are all laying from the trident forks at the quadrant are pointing into the center of the ring.
Yes, like it was very odd. I couldn't believe it. And then when it got to the center, it was in a circle. It was swirled, like a swirly bob in the middle, in the very middle.
Then around 3 o'clock in the afternoon on September 3rd, farmer David Robertson was swathing his brother-in-law's wheat field near Neilburg, Saskatchewan, when he came upon not just one circle, but 11 circles.
Oh, and that's exactly where we're going to pick up when we come back. It is the bottom of the hour, and I've put up a diagram that Linda was kind enough to send. I quickly scanned it and sent it to Keith. It's on the website now by Linda's name. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999.
Well, good morning, everybody. Linda Moulton Howe is here, and in a moment, you're going to be hearing from the farmer who actually found the Neilberg Saskatchewan Canada Crop Circle. Circles, let's make that plural. We've got a diagram. You really ought to go see that on my website. Now we'll hear it from him. That should be really interesting. All of that up and coming. Oh, by the way, I'm taking a break from the cameras tonight. So if you're up there looking for us on streaming video, you're going to see nothing but a black screen, I suspect, or whatever. But we're taking an intentional break from the cameras this morning.
Now we take you back to the night of September 8th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
You know, I've been in the Yukon territories, and they are beautiful. The Yukon territory is just astounding, but it is countless thousands of miles of almost absolutely nothing. And so it's the last place you would ever in your whole life imagine anybody would perpetrate a crop circle fraud, because nobody would see it. I've been there, Linda, I know. Anyway, welcome back. We're going to talk now about Neilberg, Saskatchewan, Canada.
Yeah, but you're making such an excellent point, because that 100-foot diameter circle that so far no one has even gotten a photograph of, but somebody walked in there and sent the report out that here was this 100-foot diameter circle plunked in the most remote area up near the Yukon border. And that was the question I was asking about, why, what would be the reason. And when we go to Neilberg, it is a very small, remote farming community west of North Battleford, not far from Alberta. The population is 400, and only 12 teenagers graduated from high school this year.
That's a small town.
Yep, and no one in Neilberg, teenager or adult, is calling this formation a hoax. And in a year when hostile farmers have cut down several good formations in England, as well as at Clint King's farm, it's been so refreshing for me to talk to farmer David Robertson from Neilberg, who is so genuinely baffled by what he found, and he does not have an attitude about it. He is curious like you and I. He would like to understand what's happening. And he's with us tonight to talk, representing farmers who have found these formations. And Dave Robertson, I think you're on the line, and welcome to Coast to Coast.
Yes, good evening. How are you tonight?
Hi, Dave. It's good to have you. So you're a farmer up there, huh?
Yes, I work for a farmer up here, yes.
How long in the farming business?
Well, I was born and raised on the farm and been with it all basically all my life.
It is apparently a very, very small town, as Linda indicated, four people graduating from school.
Mm-hmm.
A very small town.
And
yeah.
Neilberg is considered to be sort of a remote area, and the farm where the formation was found is not easy to get onto, right, Dave?
No, it isn't, no.
And if I understand correctly, the wheat field had been sprayed on August 27th, and there was no formation then.
That's correct.
And the next person to enter the field was you on September 3rd, because you were swathing the wheat for harvest.
That's right, yeah.
Now, could you talk to us and think of a radio audience and trying to paint a picture for us with words of what it was like when you first saw the circles and what you did and saw?
Hmm. Well, I was swathing the field. You go in a round and round rotation, and I made a few rounds, and I come across this first circle, and everything was flattened down. I thought, well, you know what the heck flattened this down, but never thought too much of it. So I made the next, because the circle was on the outside edge of the swather, which was about 30 feet from the cab of the tractor. And so the next round I went around, I come right over top of it with the tractor. And when I looked down on it, then I seen that it was basically a perfect circle, and all of the grain was packed right down, and right beside it, the swather went over top of the second circle, and it was exactly the same. Well, this sort of got me curious, so I got off and took a look and to see if I could see, you know, what caused it or anything like this. Couldn't find any human or any kind of tracks or anything on the ground. There was lumps of dry dirt there that hadn't been broke or disturbed, so I knew nobody'd walked over it or anything like that. So I sort of come to the conclusion, well, gee, what's this? And then I started looking around, and I, you know, started finding more and more circles. So I started walking out through the crop to check out these other circles, and I noticed when I got into them, they were smaller, but they were in a, the first three I seen were, they were all in a clockwise rotation. And then I walked over into these other circles through the crop. They're likely anywhere from 6 to 10 feet standing crop between the circles.
How many total circles were there?
There was 10 circles and one small, sort of like a signature circle, is about 3 feet or 4 feet across.
Like a grape shot, or?
Yeah, it wasn't, there these, the 10 main ones were flattened right to the ground, but the lumps of dirt on the ground weren't touched or flattened or anything like that or broke down.
David, had you been familiar with the crop circle phenomena?
Not really. I read a bit about it, you know, on the odd newspaper clipping or something like that.
I guess what I'm asking is, when you walked in there, after you had walked through each circle, did you begin to understand what you had found?
Not really, no. I did real, just more or less dumbfounded. I didn't know what it was. It was, you know, something totally new to me.
And Art and David, something that really fascinates me is that this these three arms swirling out from a center circle is reminiscent of a formation in 1996 at Windmill Hill in England, three gigantic arms sweeping out from a center circle in what are called Julia sets, with the form of fractal. Now, that formation in England 3 years ago was 1,000 feet from one end of an arm to the end of the other arm. This one that you found, Dave, the surveyor walked off at 185 feet, and she did a very detailed checking of the way that the crop was laid in circle after circle. And it is one of the most interesting things that I've seen, because it is a strange, not exactly alternating every other, but in some cases it is going clockwise, counterclockwise, clockwise, working down the arm. The center circle is clockwise. And then as you go off on the arm that goes south, there is a pattern of that's alternating clockwise and counterclockwise. And then to the arm that goes off to the west, it is all counterclockwise.
David, how perfect were these circles?
Well, I know I couldn't draw them that perfect myself if I put a peg in the center of the ground and went around with a string.
And you'll see these pictures when we get them uploaded at earthfiles.com. We are finally getting them, starting to get them assembled. The surveyor has just been taking the photographs, and she's done some excellent work.
Are they going to be aerial photographs?
We aerial photographed them this morning.
You did? Okay.
Oh, you did?
But we haven't got the things developed yet. We took them to the thing this afternoon to get them developed.
All right. In the meantime, on my website, I do have the diagram Linda sent. And I when I first looked at it, I mean, it's like modern art. I said it earlier. To me, it looks like almost a formation or an alignment of planets.
Well, and the other interesting thing, Art, following up the observation earlier about remoteness, this is the very first time that I know that anything in the fractal category has been in North America.
Mm-hmm.
We've had pictograms in Canada, and we've had pictograms in the United States, but we've never had a, let's call it a three-armed Julia set sort of theme like this one now up in Nielberg. And I think, David, you could talk to us about how difficult it would be for anybody to know that formation was there. Here you guys who were working right there didn't know it was there till you went right over.
Let's try this one, Linda, since we actually have David, a farmer, on the line, the farmer. David, could you go out in your own field and create this?
No, there's no way I possibly could with my intelligence or, you know, the equipment I would have to work with. I wouldn't get it anywhere near that perfect and, you know, and lay the grain down that perfect. And it's like the stalks, they're bent over right at the ground. There isn't a stalk broke between the ground and the head. They're all laid down without being broke or out flattened. And they're all laying flat on the ground with lumps of dirt not being disturbed or broken or flattened out. And there's no way that, you know, that I ever could figure out anything that could possibly do that without disturbing some of it.
David, when you found this, after you contemplated and sat there, I'm sure, and thought, wow, look what I have, what did you do?
I had a paper lunch bag in the tractor, and I took and drew a picture of it. I didn't trust my memory because I figured, well, gee, you know, I got to have a picture of this or nobody will believe me what it is because, you know, it was weird. And another thing, like I noticed right away, too, like when I got off the tractor and looked, like there was no tracks or no marks around. And you could go an inch outside the circle, and the wheat was standing perfectly. There wasn't a head broke, damaged, or a stalk broke or damaged at all. And as far as I'm concerned, no human or something like that could do that without at least damaging one or two.
We've got to ask, did you or anybody else around you observe any unusual phenomena in and or around the time that, or prior to the time that you found these circles?
No, nobody's heard or noticed anything around at all that we've talked to anyway, so.
And Dave, if it were humans in a helicopter or a plane, wouldn't you all have heard that?
Yes, I think we likely would have, because that would make enough noise. Because there was a farmyard a mile to the east of it and a mile to the west of this site.
And right now, looking at the details of no evidence of entry in that field, how else could anything have gotten in to make those circles without going in from the air?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the only way had to be from the air. Because the ground wasn't wet or anything like that. You know, it's moist, but it's not wet, and the lumps of dirt on top are dry, and if you just touch them with your finger, they'll crumble or break.
Hmm. What about weather phenomena? Have you had any unusual, weird weather phenomena up there?
No, we haven't. We have 20, 30-kilometer winds is the highest we've had. You know, and they're, you know, just not gust of winds, just, you know, a regular wind blowing. It's been a bit some days it's been cloudy with a little bit of showers, but likely 2 or 3 tenths of an inch of rain a day would be the tops. And the rest has just been clear, sunny weather. Good harvest weather.
And I learned another thing tonight, that Judy Arendt, when she was doing the survey, found swollen nodes on the plants, and she's taken some photographs of that, which we will be able to look at as well. And that art begins to separate this formation into that category of physical effects on the plants that
sure.
You can't make with boards or string anyway.
David, I really, really want to thank you. Do you want to just venture a guess for us, David, about what did this? You want to join the crowd and guess what did this to your field?
Well, I don't know. I've guessed a lot of things, but I guess when it comes right down to it, it's whatever you believe. If you believe it could be one thing, it could be that. And if you believe it could be something else, it could be that. But so far, I've left it with an open mind, and I haven't drawn any conclusions of what it is or who or whatever did it or what it is. But to me, it's got to be something that the conclusion I have sort of kicked around the most is it has to be some higher intelligence than what we are, or something that's somebody that's really got some higher form of transportation than what we have, or somebody that's designed something that the rest of the world don't, or the rest of the common people don't know about.
Well, I asked you whether you could create this, because after all, you have farm tools and machinery, and if you couldn't create it, sure enough, a couple of teenagers couldn't come out there and do that, could they?
No, there's no way anybody could do it on the ground without leaving marks in the soil.
David, I want to thank you for coming on the air with us.
Okay,
and
thank
Art,
you very much.
Yes.
Could I give you both another piece of news? that just before we went on the air, Paul Anderson, who is the director of Circles Phenomenon Research in Canada and edits a wonderful website about Canadian formations with a very long address, but he said just say go to earthfiles.com and link on his, hit his website link and go to his site. And he confirmed that the Charlottetown Guardian newspaper in Prince Edward Island ran a brief story on August 28th about a farmer named Bernard Handrahan, who back in mid-August found two circles in, get this, his blueberry field. One was 18 feet in diameter, and the other was 12 feet. Mr. Handrahan was quoted as saying, quote, they were perfectly circular and the centers were untouched, unquote, implying that the circles might have been rings around untouched berry crops. And this is, to my knowledge, the first time that we've heard about crop formations in blueberry fields.
Boy.
This
again,
is Prince Edward Island.
Okay, again, David, thank you so very much.
And, thank you, David.
And good night.
Thank you very much, and good night yourself.
You bet. That was very, very nice of him to come on.
Oh, he's terrific.
I understand that a lot of farmers are really ticked off about this because it brings people tromping into their field, but it well may be that he's so remote that hopefully that won't occur. But
well, I think I his attitude is refreshingly right, that he's not angry, he's curious, and he wants to understand what's happening like the rest of us. And
yeah.
I thought it was wonderful to be able to hear from a farmer himself who walked into a field and was as baffled as he is.
Well, I thought an interesting answer was the one he gave to whether with all his farm equipment he could create this, and he can't. So, I don't know what we've got on our hands, Linda, but I guess we better struggle to find out, because I have a feeling it's important.
I do, too. I think it is profoundly important, and there's not a single question that in some of these formations, whether it's England, Canada, Australia, the United States, or wherever, we have been able to demonstrate that something has happened at the chemical level, the physical level in plants that you could not alter with strings and boards. And the very issue of what is a spinning plasma vortex, as Dr. Levengood hypothesizes, with microwave frequencies in it, what could be generating it, by whom, and why. And as you just heard from Dave Robertson, everybody who comes in touch with the formations in the field, including myself, comes away with a sense that there is an intelligence with a very specific intent behind what is happening.
That's a $64 million question. All right, Linda, we're out of time. Your fax number, that's all we've got time for.
215-491-9842, and it's been a pleasure to share this with you tonight.
Thank you for being here, Linda. Good night.
Take care.
All right, there you have it. That's Linda Moulton Howe, and you heard it from the farmer himself. If you want to see the diagram, it's on my website right now. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999. Network presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired September 8, 1999.
Good morning, everybody. I am Art Bell. Coming up in a moment is Betty Eady. She had a New York Times number one bestseller called Embraced by the Light. Now, she's got a new book. It's called The Ripple Effect. Betty Eady has been there and back, actually. I think you're going to find the interview very engaging indeed. She's quite a lady. Betty Eady coming up shortly.
Now we take you back to the night of September 8th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, here comes Betty Eady. She's written a new book called The Ripple Effect, and we're going to talk all about it. Betty Eady's phenomenal New York Times number one bestseller of over 10 million copies, that's a lot of books, folks, Embraced by the Light and the Awakening Heart, touched millions of lives who seek release from their fear of death at 31 years of age. Betty Eady died in a hospital after surgery, experienced the most profound near-death experience ever. She reveals in her experiences in heaven, including meeting Jesus, the presence of angels, being reunited with departed loved ones, the power of prayer, and more. Embraced by the Light, her first book, is actually one of the all-time bestsellers in the history of books. How's that? Anyway, she knew upon returning that she was to share the experience at the appropriate time, and the message of God's unconditional love would reach around the world. That message went out in 1992 with the publication of Embraced by the Light, and was increased and amplified by the Awakening Heart. The message now ripples out to millions, who in turn share the power of God's love with others. This is the ripple effect at its finest, creating waves of positive energy that are full of love going forward into one that love will be experienced by all. And she can tell us about the other side, what lies beyond. Here is Betty Eady. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Art. Thank you very much. That was a wonderful introduction, and I have really looked forward to this evening with you. There seems to be a tremendous amount of energy in the air tonight. I don't know if you feel it, but I certainly do.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I do. You're going to have to yell at us a little, Betty.
Okay, I will.
Oh, that's good.
Is that better?
Yep, okay. That's much better.
All right.
Yeah, there's a lot of energy building on this planet, period, right now. We're in a very strange time, and, you know, people will say, millennium madness, whatever it is, I don't know. But it is strange. I mean, there's absolutely no question about it, or we're just all being psyched somehow, you know, by the millennium. I can't figure it out, but I mean, you're right.
Yes, these are different times, and there is this wonderful power that is coming. It's a change, a metamorphosis is about to take place, and the earth is preparing for the cleansing that everyone is talking about. And I suppose that does produce not only feelings of just mere excitement as I feel tonight, which is a powerful energy, a good energy, a positive one, but there's a downside to that, and that is a tremendous amount of fear that all of this is creating as well. So I suppose people are greatly interested in what God might have in store for us, or what is just if they don't believe in God.
Well, the greatest fear that man has is of death.
Right.
I don't think anybody would argue about that. It's greatest yeah. unknown, the greatest fear, and we all want to know or imagine, Betty, that it isn't just lights out. You know, velvet black and all over. We want to know that, and I guess you can tell us, can't you?
Well, I experienced that, and I had a tremendous amount of fear about dying. before I had the experience.
Why did you, what happened to you that brought you to surgery?
I actually went in with it was a minor surgery, really. I mean, it was a common one. It's a partial hysterectomy.
Okay.
And so there was no fear. I was 31 years old, very healthy, strong. And so I went in, had the surgery. The surgery went fine. I hemorrhaged during the surgery. They repaired that. But it was later that evening, after 9:30, that I hemorrhaged again, and this time I died.
Were you in the hospital? In other words, you were an inpatient?
Yes, I was.
Okay, so you were actually in the hospital, and the hemorrhage began, and this time you lost enough blood, I guess, that, vital signs stopped?
According to the doctor, when you lose the amount of blood that I lost, your heart fibrillates.
Yes.
And then just stops beating.
It's kind of like a pump without anything to pump.
Exactly. And this was part of the sensation that I felt when I was experiencing my death. I felt my heart fibrillating. There was this tremendous movement in my chest, and then it stilled. And at that moment, there was a sound, a popping sound, just a pop. And I then felt myself shooting up, and I turned and I looked down. I was at the ceiling level in the hospital room. I looked down, and I could see my body lying on the bed. This was very surprising to me, because at this point, this was in 1973, I had not heard of near-death experiences. I had never read anything about it. I didn't even believe in this. My belief was at that time that when you died, you are merely buried in the grave, and you stay there until Resurrection Day. Mm-hmm. At that time, you would come up, you would either go to heaven or you would go to hell. And I expected that. But what I didn't expect was to look down and see my body laying there, and I knew that I was dead. I had worked as an LPN in the hospitals before. I know the look of death, and I wanted to see my body, and I came down closer. I saw my body actually in a multi-dimensional form, which was very interesting because I wasn't looking through my earthly eyes, but I was seeing through spiritual eyes.
Did you have the same kind of, you know, as you and I speak now on the radio, we're in our two consciousnesses are interacting.
Right.
Did you have the same kind of awareness or consciousness?
Absolutely.
You did.
There was not even one moment of lost consciousness.
Were you, at that point when you were out of your body, scared? Were you apprehensive? Were you elated? Were you curious? What emotions?
I think at first I was maybe just a little bit frightened because as I turned and looked down at the bed, I could see my body. I didn't know that the body was mine at first, when I came down closer, then I could see that it was me,
mm-hmm.
which was interesting to me because I'm used to looking at myself in the mirror.
Sure.
But as I looked down and saw my body, I didn't recognize it. When I did see that this body was mine, then my first thoughts were for my family. I worried about them. And I thought, the first thought was actually, oh, my God, I'm dead. And nobody is here to know that because there was not a nurse, not a doctor. I was alone, and then I thought of my family.
So in other words, you hadn't even been able to punch the nurse's station button or anything?
No, I couldn't. I was too weak. When I awakened and felt this weakness, it was during that time that I had already hemorrhaged to a certain point to where I couldn't even move.
Gotcha.
And then at that point, my heart fibrillated. And I died. What happened to me after that, because I wanted to see my family, I was able to go there. But first I was greeted by three beings that appeared to me, they reminded me of what I would probably think of as monks, in that they had soft brown robes on, they had belts around their waist. But I knew that they were not physical beings.
All right, let me take you back again.
Mm-hmm.
You were above your own body.
Yes.
And how did the transition occur from where you were to suddenly being in this whole new place that you're now beginning to describe? Was it just sort of a fade out and fade in, or were you just suddenly somewhere else, or what?
You mean coming out of my body?
Well, yeah, as it, you know, yeah, you came out of your body, you
I
said.
I came out of my body from what I would say would be my chest. Some people describe when they've had their near-death experience coming out at their forehead or various places, but I actually felt myself coming out of my body from my chest.
Okay, and you rose and you saw your own body. But,
yes.
But then you moved to another realm.
Yes.
Now, how did that transition occur?
At first, before I went on from that into another realm, I actually traveled through space here on Earth to my home because I wanted to visit my family. I wanted to see them one last time.
So what you wanted to do is what happened?
Exactly. I had this strong desire of love for them, and I wanted to be with them.
And so it happened. There you were.
And then I went actually... As I thought it, I looked around the room, and I looked for a place to exit, which is another curious thought, because wouldn't you naturally exit through the door?
Right.
But my spirit just looked for a place to exit, and I went through the window, because the windows do not open. They're solid windows in the upper floors of a hospital. They do not open.
Right.
And I went through the window, and it was so natural to me. As more time elapsed, everything became more natural to me, being out of the body, than actually having experienced the body. As I traveled through the over the city, I could actually see below me the trees, and I went right out into my home, right through the walls, into my living room where I saw my husband. Sitting in the chair, he was reading the newspaper. My children, I looked at the clock, it was 9:45. The children were running up and down the stairs. I remember thinking that my husband had promised to put the children to bed at 8:30. And here it was, 9:45. And he wasn't paying any attention to them. And they were just having a good time on the stairs, throwing pillows at each other. And I was annoyed. I was annoyed at him. So even as I think back on it now, as a spiritual being, I had feelings, I had emotions, I had thoughts
right.
of the things here on the earth. But as I looked at my husband, as much as I love him, as much as I love my children, I didn't want contact with them. I didn't feel that I needed it. And then as I stood there watching them, I began to know, and I'm to put the know in quotes because it's more of something deep within the spirit, the soul, that I had existed on earth at a time for them that was needed, and now they no longer needed me, and it was okay for me to go on.
This was something you just understood.
I understood, and so I left.
One more question on behalf of everybody who wants to know these things.
Mm-hmm.
As a spirit, Betty, when did you have, you had sight. You said you could see your husband, you could
yeah.
see your children.
Mm-hmm.
And what of yourself? I mean, what of yourself?
At that time, I knew that I was whole, but I wasn't interested in myself. I felt that I had all of my body parts. I didn't look at myself until much later. When I went back to the hospital, and then I was drawn into this by this energy, into what then appeared to be like a tunnel, and I was drawn into this dark space. It was totally black. Now, before I had my experience, I was claustrophobic, and very frightened of darkness. I was raised in a boarding schools, an Indian boarding schools, and that had taught me a lot of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So under normal conditions, if I were in something dark, I would have absolutely panicked. But in this place, it was so filled with love, so nurturing and so beautiful that I actually felt that I would prefer this place to any other place that I had ever experienced. And then I felt, I saw a pinpoint of light that pierced this blackness. And then I wanted to go to that light.
Mm-hmm.
It was my heart's desire to go to the light. And that, and at that point, I began to, I swirled and began to travel towards that light, going feet first. This is when I noticed that I had a spiritual body.
I see.
Because I could see then that I had feet, and they were out in front of me, but they were of a different kind. It would, I could describe it best by saying that it looked like spun light.
Some people have breech births. It sounded like you had a breech death.
I think so.
Feet first, huh?
I think so. I think it's also has, probably has something to do with personality, because when I want to go somewhere, I want to go direct, and I do go feet first. So, I don't know.
Most people would be incredibly frightened of, if they were aware they were dead, which
yes,
you obviously were, to go to an area where there was nothing at first but blackness.
Right. I would have been. I mean, I know, had I not had this experience, Art, I would have, it would be something more frightening to me than anything I could imagine. It was frightening to me. After having had this experience, death absolutely does not frighten me. There is nothing on this earth that I am afraid of, because the worst thing that can happen to you is that you would die. And so it removes your fear. And then having gone beyond that, even beyond the death, beyond the darkness, beyond the this place where spirits seemed to be in this black space, and I knew that every one of these spirits were being nurtured and being loved by God.
So you could feel others about you but not see them as such?
Exactly. Now, normally, that would have really panicked me.
You bet.
Yes.
But not, I guess, if you were sort of given a feeling of complete love, why you'd
right,
be comforted by that, I suppose.
Yes. So it was the love that held me there. And it was a love that comforted me, and it was the most beautiful place that I had ever been. It was the most wonderful that I had ever felt. I cannot overemphasize the beauty of that darkness.
No pain, no physical sensations.
Nothing. It was just beautiful. It was as though my body, my spiritual self, was going through a healing, a transformation, because everything of the earth dissolved away from me, and I was just filled with this tremendous love, like just being held. If you feel the comfort of your father's arms or
mm-hmm,
whatever was your security, if you could just imagine that, that is that comfort that you feel, and then just intensify that by 1,000 times. I mean, it was so beautiful. But the beauty was yet to be experienced, and that was the beauty of following the light. After that light pierced this darkness.
Which began as like a pinpoint of light.
A pinpoint, just a speck of light, enough to attract my attention. And I knew, Art, that anyone in this dark space with me, any one of us, if we saw that light and we so desired it, we could all turn and go towards that light. But I also knew that there would be spiritual beings who would not be prepared to go there. They would not release what they had here in this comfort and in this beauty, that they would not follow that light. But I wanted to.
Do you think, Betty, this is an interesting question, that some who had been mortal and were there in your condition, sort of in the black waiting room, if you
mm-hmm,
want to think of it that way,
mm-hmm,
do you think some of them did not go to the light, Betty?
I think that some of them did not go to the light because they did not trust or believe in it. This may come from the person's belief system. You know, there are some of us that feel that the minute we die, we're going to go straight to hell.
I understand. And maybe we do. Hold on, Betty. We'll be right back to you. So some may not have gone to the light.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999. listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 8, 1999.
My guest is Betty Eady, and we're talking about where you go when you die. We'll be right back.
You may still have time, you might still get by. Every time I think about it, I want to cry. The bombs and the devil, and the kids keep coming. The way to be easy, no time to be young.
I say we'll be right back because I never, ever step on that line. It somehow means a lot to me. And it'll probably be a good segue right into what we're going to do next with Betty. And your phone calls are coming up.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999.
Betty, welcome back. Did you see a movie, Betty, called The Rapture?
I did. Yes, I sure did. If I'm thinking of the right one, it was a woman that had an experience and came back with special gifts for healing.
No, actually, that was another one. The Rapture actually was a pretty rough movie in a lot of ways. It began almost pornographically, I would say, and it was about a woman who was determined that the end days were here and God was coming back, and she went out into the desert with her child. And she ended up killing her child. And she went, when she finally died, she went to an area like you have just described. And when she got there, Betty, she did, I guess, her own life review, if you will. And she actually saw her daughter there, and she told her daughter at the end, this was so incredible, she told her daughter that she was not coming with her, she was not going ahead, she was not going into the light, because she didn't have the right to. In other words, she had made her own decision, she had judged herself, mm-hmm. and she was not going forward. That's why I asked you about whether you thought some did not go forward to the light.
Yes, I knew that this was also a choice of theirs, not of God's. I too experienced a life review. It was some time later in my experience, but I had to experience and see for myself and feel for myself all of the pain that I had created while I was here on Earth. It was not a very happy experience for me. But I was also allowed to experience all of the good that I had produced, that I had created. And although there was very little of that...
Well, I was going to ask, was it like a short subject, the good part, and a long feature film, the bad part?
Well, for me, that's exactly what it was, because I had during my early life, developed quite an attitude. And the attitude was negative. And I was just basically giving out to the world what I had been taught, and it wasn't good. I had to experience that and see that I had indeed hurt people and that I needed to change my life. But I also witnessed some of the good things that I had done, and I was amazed to find that most of the good was actually very simple things that I did without thinking. You know, sometimes we go out and do good deeds because we feel that, well, we have to, like maybe give it to a charity because, our foundation or organization has to, or those are not considered great acts of kindness. What was considered great acts of kindness on my part was actually just very simple little smiles. Pleasant thoughts that I had about other people, things that I would never have considered as a great deed here on Earth.
but just simply something that I felt for someone else, a love. And when I experienced that, then I knew that it wasn't in me to be the loving person that I could have been. I also noticed when we were talking earlier about my spiritual body, and I noticed how dim my body was, the light from my body that just the simple glow from that. Mm-hmm. Often when I'm out on speaking engagements, I tell people trying to describe this that it would be compared to the greater light. It was like 7 watts of light compared to thousands and thousands of watts, if you can imagine it.
I can.
And the light is the love. And this is what distinguishes the great ones on the other side in heaven. I'm calling it heaven not because that name was given me, but because we think of heaven as being a beautiful place, and so most people can connect with that thought. So in heaven, these glorious beings of tremendous light are that way because of the love that is within them. And this is what God is. God is love. And so that love flowed from them. It is who they are. And my little 7 watts of light was so humiliating, and I was very embarrassed. I was a very judgmental person, and I was shown that life here on earth, this earth, is not as we think it to be. That, in fact, the heavens scrolled back is the best way I can describe it. And they said, Betty, look down. We want to show you something. And they showed me a man, a drunken bum, I call him, that was laying on the street. And they said, what do you see? And I said, in that judgmental attitude or tone, why, just a drunken old bum.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we want to show you what this man looks like in spirit. And so they took this man's spirit and they stood it before me, and I was so embarrassed. I will never forget that humiliation. And they said, this man, because he glowed with this tremendous light, they said he gave his entire life on earth to one other soul. He is going to lay on that street until this man passes him. And when their eyes connect, That spiritual passage, that love is going to be felt, and that love is going to change the entire world of this other man. They told me he was an attorney, and because that man
really?
Yes.
I didn't think that many of them made it.
Well, they showed me one.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
This attorney, because he would make this spiritual connection with this drunken man, and they were soul friends before this earth. And because of that connection, this attorney was going to do some tremendous work on the earth. And after that exchange was made, then that drunken bum could come home.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you.
It's a big one.
if that is what it's all about.
Yes.
If it's about love and the amount of love.
That's all it is.
Well, there's a lot of people out there in trouble. And,
yes.
Of course, I guess somehow the comforting part might be that we don't all have to be perfect. None of us are in order to make it. But you got to kind of wonder where you are in the scale of things.
Well, we are all here. You know, there's a saying that we are all spiritual beings here on earth to have an earthly experience.
Right.
And that is absolutely true, because as spiritual beings, before we came here, we wanted this experience to be here. Each and every one of us, and I was told this while I was there, that each and every one of us were hand-picked, selected by God to experience earth. And we were going to take with us the love that we had already developed that was within us, and we were going to express it. We were going to use that to create with it. We were going to explore it. And he knew that we would make mistakes. We knew we would make mistakes, but that we would all return back to him. Now, this totally goes against what I had been taught as a child in my religious structure.
Do you think there's a hell?
No. not as we understand it. There is hell in that hell is the opposite or of heaven, and it is expressed that way in the Bible because it shows us one of the worst things that could happen to us, just as we think the worst thing that could happen to us is death. And there is no death. But hell, as I understood it, is not a place, but it is a state of mind, a state of being. It is what you take with you when you leave this earth, and something that is difficult to be removed from because it is your belief.
You know, about a week ago, a lot of people must have caught it. CNN actually did a little piece that they ran all day long on what hell is and what people think hell is.
Hmm.
And most people have the very traditional, you know, hellfire and brimstone, burning up, screaming, screeching hell. A concept of hell. And that really is what most people believe.
You know, Art, it amazes me that anyone could believe that that is where God would send anyone. Because first he would send us down to earth, remove from our memory that he even exists, place us in homes that are terribly dysfunctional. We have to go through life, through all of this corruption that is out there, and then go to hell. Because we didn't understand or know of him?
I know, but then there are some worse than others, and there are some bad people, Betty,
yes,
in this world. Now, it may not be, I don't think God sends anybody to hell, but maybe in the end they send themselves.
They certainly do, and many, many of these people, I was shown so many incredible things that I couldn't even write about them. In Embraced or any of my books, because I'll tell you, it's been 26 years since I had the experience.
Well, you know, when you fill out a resume to get a job, you can lie a little bit and BS and write down experience you didn't have and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I have this feeling that when you get to that point,
yes.
to the blackness or the white light or
right.
near the white light,
that's right.
That you can't cheat on your resume. In other words,
you can't cheat on your resume. And you know, once you've experienced the beauty and the love of God, as I experienced it, there is nothing compelling here on this earth that would make you want to lie, because you would not want to jeopardize returning where you came from. Now, there is nothing on this earth that appeals to me. I want to go back, and I want to go back where I was, where God took me. I want to go there, maybe even higher if possible. I want to complete my mission here on this earth. It's been my compelling force, my drive. One of the reasons I am here is because he wants his spiritual children to understand his true nature and not to fear him. I was shown all the devastation, the possibilities of the earth and its change and all of its corruption and how we become corrupted. I was shown all of that. But I was told that the most important thing is to not to fear that, because there is no death, and that, yes, you can prepare to live longer on this earth. You know, there's much to do about getting your preparations for all the, your water and your food, and all of this should be done. But there's a step that's even greater than that, and that is preparing your spirit to meet God. And when you don't have fear of death, nothing is going to harm you, because there is no such thing as death. And this is why he sent me back. I have to tell people about this. I have to let them know that God's true nature is one of love, and not that he is going to separate us and throw us into a fiery pit of hell, but that at any point in our life, we can change what we are doing and redirect our thoughts and our deeds and come closer to him. And when we do that, we have no need for fear. Spirits are being called by God to awaken to him now more than ever before. And even before the earth was created, we knew what his plan was. We knew that this would happen. We even counted on it.
Betty, I want to know what you say to all of these neurosurgeons and doctors who have commented on the experience you're now talking about, and they say, oh, listen, it's the brain dying from the outside in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a natural process. Death is a natural process and a process unto itself, and that your brain begins to die from the outside in, and people do see that center as they approach it, as the brain cells die, and the brain and the body at this point issue some sort of endorphin or some sort of something or another that is intended to ease the process of death. And so, what do you say to these people?
Yeah, in the early part of Embrace by the Light, when it first went out, I was attacked by many people, including doctors, who made these comments that you are suggesting.
Yes, yes.
But most doctors now, and I have gone out and I've spoken to groups of doctors, 350, 400 and some odd doctors, nurses.
Yes.
And most doctors who have taken the time to educate themselves on near-death experiences now know that they do happen. It's the doctors that have not furthered their education. But this is what I brought to these 350 doctors. I said, okay, let's say that at the time of my death, that all of this happened, something in the brain is prepared for me to have this experience.
Yes.
Let's say that is true. Now, I'll agree with you if you just listen to the rest of it, is what I told them. Okay, now explain to me then what happened, not only to me, but thousands, millions. I think there's a reported over 8 to 10 million people that have had near-death experiences.
Right.
So I said, explain to me then what happened. When my spirit left my body, I could see clearly in the room. I traveled. I could see clearly. I wasn't foggy. I wasn't blinded. I went into my home. I saw my husband. I saw what my children were doing. Later, I told my husband what he was doing, and he was stunned. He was shocked. And
right,
then,
Betty, hold it. Right, it's a good cliffhanger point. Hold it right there. We'll be right back. It's the top of the hour. She's making a very good point about her husband, isn't she?
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999.
In my arms, and know the magic of her charms, cause I want girl to call my own. I want a dream lover, so I don't have to dream alone.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999.
Actually, we're talking about the final ride. Betty Edie took it. She's here with us tonight, and that's what we're talking about. You may well recall Embrace by the Light. You should. It sold millions and millions and millions of copies. Now comes The Ripple Effect, a new book by Betty Edie. And we're talking about that. What happens to you when you take the ride?
Now we take you back to the night of September 8th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Weird story at this hour coming out of Portland, Maine. There is a beach mystery underway in Maine. Millions of tiny, the AP describes them as squishy creatures, washed up onto southern Maine beaches over the Labor Day weekend, and thus far nobody knows what they are. One lifeguard says they look kind of like clear jelly beans. One scientist speculates maybe the hurricane somehow brought them ashore. Weird stuff going on in our environment, to be sure. Betty Eady is my guest, and we were talking about the scientists who absolutely stridently maintain that the sort of thing she experienced in great detail is a chemical combined with a dying brain. But as you pointed out, you saw your husband, you noticed the time, you observed their actions, you later told him, and he verified all that's true. That sure does throw a kink into the old dying brain theory.
Well, it certainly does, Art, but there's even a greater story. One might even say maybe my husband would agree to that and conjured up, maybe we conjured this up together. In the second book I wrote, in The Awakening Heart, there's a beautiful story that a friend of mine who is a physician who had a near-death experience, he actually died and came back to life 4 days after his death, and he chose to come back during his autopsy because he wanted the physicians that were around his body to see that God could bring you back to life or put you back into your body at any state that he chose. And so this man actually came back after the Y had already been cut, after some of his organs had already been moved, and much to the shock of the doctors that were around his body. All of this is documented, as a matter of fact. And so it's not just my experience, but there are millions of experiencers who share a similar stories. And, you know, it's much like the conversation you were having earlier about UFOs. You know, we are intelligent beings, and I think that we are beyond the point now of denying what we do not understand, mm-hmm. and we should be investigating now.
Oh, and boy, do I agree.
Absolutely, because these things do exist. When I was taken into heaven, I was shown that God created many, many worlds, that this earth is not the only place that is inhabited. I certainly do believe that there are people that visit our planet. They are far superior in technology than we are. And when we become more aware of this, when we allow ourselves to come out of our cocoons, then we can broaden our understanding. We can even develop our technology much quicker than it is right now.
Well, Betty, it makes sense to me that with all that is there, and on any clear night, go out and confirm it for yourself. You know, Jodie Foster said, if they're not out there, what a waste of space it would be. I mean, we're just a teeny speck of nothing compared to the rest of what is out there that we're already aware of, and there may be more. So, yeah, sure, there's life out there. If there isn't, it just doesn't make sense.
Absolutely.
And then if there is life, that it could be advanced and visiting us is reasonable to assume.
That is so true. And for those that believe in God, in the higher power, why would they want to limit him? And especially for those who say that this is this earth is the prison for the people insane.
I've thought that on days.
I'm sure that many people have.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is as they explained to me, that we are all going through a growth period of growth, and to experience the different worlds is a part of that. And so, yes, is there reincarnation? Yes, but not in the sense that we think it to be, but rather that we experience our life here on this earth, and there are other worlds that we will experience hereafter. Understanding it and looking at it from that point of view is just absolutely mind-boggling.
Are you saying that, okay, there is reincarnation, but you think it's far less an automatic that you come back to Earth?
Yes. Actually, they explained it to me that reincarnation is not as we think it to be, that, you know, many people say claim that they are, well, say, Cleopatra. And I know years back I had a psychic who told me that I was Mary, Queen of Scots. I believed that. I believed it with all my heart because I wanted to believe that I had existed before. And not only that, but there was a part of me that actually experienced the smells of being inside of a castle and the loneliness, and I could feel this woman about me. When I had my experience, and I actually inquired about a reincarnation, and I was told that cells have memories. Every cell on the human body
right.
has memories of everything that has ever existed. And so it would be easy for my cells to recall and experience someone like Mary, Queen of Scots. And, you know, just a couple of years back, I remember the, the First Lady, Clinton's wife. I can't remember her name.
Hillary.
Hillary.
The future senator in New York.
Yes, and she was sitting and having these imaginary visits or something with
Eleanor Roosevelt.
Right. And I understood the process that she was using. And actually, you might say she was sitting down and having a conversation with her own cellular memory. Because all of our cells have memories of everything. They just recall. And so where people recall memories of pre-life as this person or that person or the other, it is not that they lived that life. They are just tapping in to what has already existed, even if it is another person's life. This is our cell memories are passed down genetically.
Well, the evidence for that would be borne out, and I know you know about the lady who had the heart and lungs transplanted onto her from, I believe, an 18-year-old boy
mm-hmm.
or a youngster, and she woke up with cravings for, I think it was beer and pizza, I don't know what it was, what an 18-year-old would want. And
yes.
then later, she, and this is what really blew me away, Betty, she dreamed the donor's name.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful.
That's cellular memory. That
right.
has to be cellular memory.
It is cellular memory.
But what does that say, though, about what our composite is? In other words, most scientists would think that our consciousness, everything we are, is in our brains.
Well, we are electrical beings. We are made up of light energy, and we are electrical. Just as you and I are speaking right now, and over the airwaves comes our voice.
Yes.
Our voices.
Yes.
This is all electronically produced. It is all sent out there magically. And so is our body. And so, you see, we are more in tune than we think we are.
Well, you know, all of that is true. But for the person with the radio out there, once you and I have said what we have said, it rushes past them. They hear it. But they don't encounter it again, unless we replay it. But, I mean, under normal circumstances, it may continue on into space forever, as radio signals are said to do.
And they do.
But they don't encounter it again, though.
They lose their power, their energy. And it weakens.
Yes.
And so this is why it goes through. But actually, one of the things, again, that I was taught while I was there, and that is that these electrical waves are voices. Yours and mine right now travel not only to radio, but it actually, the vibrations of our tones that we produce literally enter in to every person on this earth.
A collective.
Yes. And it is through these tones that they caution me that understanding the tones is very important, because we can raise or lower the vibrations of an individual by the tones in our voice.
What is the present state of the collective, Betty?
Right now, the reason why this Earth is going through the tremendous change that it is obviously heading towards is a true indicator of where we are collectively. We are in a very low, very negative vibration. This can be raised. All of this does not need to happen. It absolutely can be changed if we change our level of thought, if we change our level of our deeds, because everything that we do is given a value, an energy. You know, we talk about, and I believe in numerology, I believe in astrology, I believe in all of that. Those are tools. It's just misused sometimes by people. But speaking about numerology, today is 9-9-9-9.
I know.
And so this is kind of a fearful day for many people because they have looked forward to this day, and some people with trepidation, with a tremendous amount of fear. And this is why I continue out there with my work, Art, because I want to help people overcome fear. I want to raise the vibrations. I want to dispel fear, because fear and guilt are our heaviest energies. Fear, guilt, and of course shame. And that lowers self-worth. Everything goes to the lowest energy. For those that must believe in Satan, and Satan does exist as an energy of negativity.
He does.
But, yes.
As God exists?
As a positive. That's exactly right.
Oh, now, I really haven't heard too many people who've been through what you've been through say that. Satan exists as an energy.
Yes.
A negative energy.
He opposes the energy of God.
As God exists, as a positive energy.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Absolutely. God, although God is a being that I experienced, I mean, I literally saw this man as God. Now, there, you can interpret that any way that you would feel that you had to. Some people might say, well, I had a belief in God prior to my death, and so therefore I saw him as a being, a male figure, because some people believe, of course, God is female. What I saw was a perfectly balanced being. This being had feminine and masculine qualities about him. And but I knew that Satan was also a being, but that his energy would be that of a negative. And because in order for us to experience Earth and all that we would want to create, we would have to have that energy, just like we have to have up and down and north, south, east, and west.
Yes.
We must have the opposing force. Just like strengthening a muscle, you must have that opposing force in order to build that muscle. And to have faith, you must have the opposing.
Betty, I've talked to a lot of people on the radio who don't believe in God.
Oh, yes, I know there are.
I mean, they just flat don't believe in God.
Right.
Now, what about those?
You know, I don't blame these people. They were probably raised much like I was. I was afraid of God to the point that I wanted to dismiss him from my life.
Well, what I mean is, at that same moment, without the insights or the luck, I guess, to go and come back, a person arriving at that point of darkness, if that's their arrival location indeed at all, who didn't believe in God at all, I guess you can only speculate, but I mean...
I guess I could speculate on that, only in that I experienced it, and I have heard experiences of thousands of people during these 26 years of having had my experience. And I can tell you stories, and these are some of the stories I share in The Ripple Effect, as a matter of fact. These are stories of people that come from different belief systems, just different faiths, that had near-death experiences and actually experienced like what I experienced.
Right.
And so what I would like to see more than anything else, I think, on Earth, and that is that people come together and forget about their religious structure, their current religious structure, and start investigating these experiences. Let's find out. Let's compare. Let's weigh and measure these things and find out what people are truly experiencing. I know that everyone comes from their own perception. That's the only place they can come from.
So you're telling me that of those people that you do know of who mm-hmm. have an experience like this, who did not believe in God,
right?
Absolutely.
They met him.
They had the same experience.
Yes, they met him. I actually have met and have letters in the book, The Ripple Effect, from Jewish people, Buddhists,
yes,
who wrote me letters and shared their experiences with me, and they met Christ. Now, that was quite a shock to them, because this man was not in their experience. Now, Jesus was a part of my experience, a part of my religious background. It would be natural for me to say, call this being Jesus.
Got you. Of course that would be
right.
Natural. But of the Buddhists, you're telling me they met Christ, not Buddha.
Right. That's true. And yet many people have met Buddha. But more people, I'm just talking about the letters that I have collected and people that I have met, more of these people have met Christ. I received a phone call from a woman that was terrified. And she says, my God, Betty, my mother died and she saw Jesus. And I said, what a wonderful thing. I mean, I said, don't worry about it. I experienced him in my experience. She says, but you don't understand. My mother's Jewish.
I've got you. All right. Hold it right there. Boy, we've got to talk that one over a little bit. I really, really have a hard time with that. Why would that happen? Is the clear implication that the Christian view of Christ and God is the real and only view? Is that it? We'll ask. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999. Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired September 8th, 1999.
Good morning, everybody. Betty Edie is here, and she's been there and back. Gonna be some sweet love. That's what we're talking about. I have a couple of pretty interesting questions, I think, and we'll get to them in a moment. And, of course, your phone calls for Betty Edie also coming up.
Now we take you back to the night of September 8th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, once again, Betty Edie, the minority in this world would be Christians. Christians are not the largest number in the world right now, correct?
I really don't know where that stands right now.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think there are more Buddhists and others than there are Christians. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you got to figure at best 50-50. Half the people in the world mm-hmm. don't believe in Christ and God as we know them, or
right.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, you know, I just, I've, this has always been something that I have struggled with terribly, Betty,
mm-hmm.
and that is that there are good and bad people of faith and no faith. There are good and bad people of various faiths.
Absolutely.
But what you seem to suggest when you say what you say
mm-hmm.
is that there's only one true path.
No, I don't believe that there is one true path. As a matter of fact, I was told that there wasn't.
Oh.
So this was what, again, was something that I had to rethink as far as my religious background, which was at that, in my early youth, was Catholicism. And the Protestant, of course. And so it was very difficult for me. This wasn't an easy experience at all. And then to come out with Embraced by the Light, of course I know that it crosses many paths, many lives that do not believe in God. But I have to share the experience as I experienced it.
That's right.
Yeah, and otherwise I would be lying.
Right.
And so this is why I'm greatly interested in research being done in this area. Great research, not what we're doing now, but I mean unbiased, so that we can get to the root of all of this. But I'm just merely sharing the truths as I see them, and from people that have experienced near-death experiences, even children. Who have not been taught of God.
Especially children.
Especially children. They come back talking about Jesus.
I know.
They also come back talking about someone by the name of Elizabeth. I think it's important for us to search these things out and to, explain them somehow. Or at least, I have a great interest in it because I experienced it. But I know that I experienced Jesus, and to say that he is anyone else but Jesus would be a lie.
Gotcha. No, you can only tell us what happened to you, and I wouldn't want you to tell us anything else.
Exactly. You wouldn't want me to try to make this generic to fit all religions.
Nope. Just what happened to you. Here's somebody who asks a pretty interesting question. It is as follows. You said you went to the best place you'd ever been.
Yes, to that point, uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And particularly since you had gone to your husband and your children and you knew that you didn't have to be there anymore, you were comfortable with that.
I was very comfortable with leaving them.
Then the obvious question is, if you loved it so much there, what are you doing back?
I didn't want to come back. I can tell you that.
You didn't want to come back?
Not at all, Art. I did not want to come back here. And I have received a lot of criticism for having written this in Embrace because I told it as I experienced it. And I literally threw myself down in the presence of Jesus and told him that under no circumstances was I going to go back to Earth, that I was finished with Earth, I was through, and that nothing that he could say or do was going to make me go back.
Wow.
You
were there with an attitude, huh?
I had an attitude. I really did, and I'm being honest about that. I'm not that big of a person, but I'll tell you, when you're raised in the Indian boarding schools, you learn how to fight. You come up with your own thoughts, your own mind. And I was not going to be sent back to Earth, even if Jesus had told me I had to. And I know, and people say that's blasphemous. I don't care what they call it. That is what I did.
No, all I want is what actually happened, and it's pretty amazing.
Yes, it was amazing. I look back on it, and I'll tell you, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed by it because, that was pretty gutsy.
Definitely was.
But what was amazing...
It's like having a burning bush go next to you.
Oh, absolutely. I expected the burning bush and the full wrath of God to land upon me, but I'll tell you, I could not come back, not after experiencing that tremendous love. I couldn't. My spirit, my soul just cried out for something else, and I just could not come back.
Well, apparently, we don't always get what we want.
No, and what happened next amazed me as well. And that was that Jesus, who I knew to be Jesus, laughed.
Laughed?
Laughed. A very humorous laugh.
Oh, really?
Yes. And he said, he said, let us show you what your mission is. And then after that, if you you make the decision. And I knew that nothing he could tell me, nothing he could show me
was going to
do it. Would ever convince me. Uh-uh.
All right.
And so I agreed to that. I said, okay, I agree to that.
Okay, take your best shot.
Yes, give it your best shot. And he said, I will show you, but after it is shown to you, he said, it will be removed from your consciousness because you cannot take it back with you. And I agreed to that. Well, but, I have to say, I do not know what my mission is, but I know that whatever it was, I agreed to do it because
so
I'm
you
here.
Did, in fact, forget.
Yes, it was taken from me. It was taken. And I was told, though, that I would be writing a book. Now, you're talking about an Indian woman who never got past the sixth grade. And to write a book, much less to come back with this information and to share it with the world, I mean, after I came back, I went into deep depression. I told my husband about this, and I told him what I had. I was told that I had to do at least that portion of it. That was not the completed mission, but I knew that this was what I had to do. And I went to school, went back. I started studying. I took classes at the community college. I did whatever I could.
Do you remember reviving? Do you remember going back to your body? Do you remember any of that?
Yes, I do. I absolutely do. After they showed me everything in heaven that they wanted me to see.
Yes.
Then I was told that I needed to return. And I came back. And I remember entering my body, which was the most horrible thing that ever happened to me. It was my body was stiff. It was cold. It was clay-like. It was thick. In Embraced by the Light, I said it was like crawling into some dirty coveralls, you know, muddy, dirty coveralls. My spirit was absolutely repelled by the body. I felt free before, you know, as a spirit, I was free. I felt loved. I felt joy. I felt everything that was wonderful. And then to come back into this body was horrid.
Well, then here's a good straight-on question for you. When I heard you when we began the interview, I had the sense that you almost wish you could die.
I have really resisted that thought because I know that it goes against God's will.
I'm asking you to be bluntly honest, and that's what I heard in your voice.
Okay,
that
you want me to be bluntly honest with
right.
you, Art?
That's right.
I am not afraid of anything, and the reason I do not fear death is because it would be joyous to me should that happen. I have been reluctant to talk about that too much because my family does not like to hear it.
Well, that was going to, of course, be my next question. Yeah, your family would be very concerned, I would think, if you expressed that view to them.
Well, they're not just to them. They asked me not to say it when I'm on tour because they said there are freaks out there.
Yeah, there are.
And someone might say, Betty, you want to go back to heaven? All right, I'll send you there.
Yeah, there's so, always that, I suppose.
Yes,
but I mean, there really is that urge, huh?
There's not an urge to take my life.
No.
Because to me, that's throwing God's gift back in his face.
That's something we should probably talk about separately. But I mean, assuming that
assuming that God said, would you want to come home right now? I would say yes, because I made them promise. I made Jesus promise that the moment my mission is complete, that I would come back home to him. And he promised me. Now, I believe in God because I saw him. And I know that God would never lie. There's nothing but truth in him. And so the minute my mission is complete, or the minute that any one of our missions are complete, because each one of us when we were in heaven, or back home, I like to refer to it as, when we were back home with him, we came here because he chose us to, and because we agreed to, we wanted to, and we each came with a purpose in mind.
For example, an infant's mission.
Yes.
Who was thrown into a dipsy dumpster and found dead inside a trash can.
Right.
That infant's mission could be that.
Exactly. And I know that goes against any normal thought that we could possibly or would possibly have. But you see, every action, every deed, everything that is permitted and allowed by God is for our growth. Rather, whether it is individual growth or collectively as a society. When we see this horror happening, then it is up to each one of us to make a change. And this is why we vote for the right people. This is why we set standards. We are all responsible for every corruptible thing here on this earth.
Well, Betty, that bears a little conversation. If you look around us now, our social behavior, our wars, our killing, by the way, usually in the name of God or some God.
Yes.
Our environmental degradation, what we're doing to the planet, and the course we're on right now. While I understand that it's a good thing to preach love, because I too believe that's what it's all about. I really do.
It is.
A pragmatic assessment of our present circumstances would not lead me to believe that good things lie directly ahead.
Right. You're absolutely right on. That's how it is. But I'll tell you, I was shown something else, Art, that encourages me. And that is that at this moment of time, right now, we are in this stage of awakening. God has already called many people to come forward in this crusade, if you will. It's as though these people are warring angels upon this earth.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these people that are warring angels are not men, but they are women. And he told me that these women are women of wisdom. They're not coming forward in a movement of women as has been done in the past. But these are women that are going to step forward and say, no more. This will not happen to my children anymore. I want the laws to be changed. I don't know how involved you are with what's going on with the young people these days, but I have grandchildren and children who are afraid to correct, much less punish them. For their deeds. These are kids that are becoming very undisciplined.
Oh, yes.
And not only in their thought, but in their behavior. It's very embarrassing to be out and to see people with their children misbehaving, and those children or parents begin to panic because the law can literally take their children away from them and punish them, throw them in jail if they even correct that child with a SWAT.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we have torn apart our families have become torn apart.
Well, that's what I meant by our social behavior.
Yes. It has declined. There is this chance, because I was shown it. I literally saw it, that we can make a change and that this change is about to happen. And I'll tell you, we can do this through the power of our prayer, prayers were also shown to me as being the most powerful spoken words upon this earth. Everything that we speak with our mouth, we create. Everything, even our curse words. Illnesses are produced by the words that we use.
Mm-hmm.
We can change the energy on this planet by watching our words and by using positive things, words and emotions and doing deeds. This can happen. It doesn't have to end the way I see that it could also go if we do not make these changes.
What were the possibilities you were shown?
Well, of course, you're not going to hear too much new from me. I think just about everyone speaks of this, and that is the tremendous weather changes. That was shown to me. The earthquakes. In fact, I live in an area. I actually saw all that could happen in this ring of fire that we have with the volcanic eruptions that are all not only possibilities, but of course they are predicted to happen. I saw the mountains, and that the mountains, tall mountains, literally laid down and became one with the valleys. And of course, when the mountains lay down, other parts of the earth have to raise up.
Mm-hmm.
And so no one, you know, people can say that they want to go to this state or that state to get away from anything, all the disasters. It's an impossibility, because where something happens on one side of the world, something else is going to happen on another side.
Earth changes, and there would be no escape.
There is no escape from it. But except for that, we can make a difference in changing this world by changing, literally changing our minds about it.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be, and I was shown massive panic. I was shown darkness that would come upon the earth. All the things that you have heard probably for eons about the earth, I was shown that was a possibility. We have produced this negativity. It's a negative energy. And it's brought to the point of destruction, total destruction.
Betty, I interviewed some Hopi elders.
Oh, yes.
And what they told me was that, number one, they had no interest in coming on the air, really didn't want to come on the air, but came on the air because what they knew was coming, they said, has now begun.
Yes, it
it's
has.
Already begun. In other words, this is not something we're forecasting. We're here tonight, they said, to tell you it has begun.
We're here.
Now, even they did not say it could not be stopped or altered or mitigated in some way, but they said it's upon us now.
Right.
That was the message. There's no more time. It's now.
Right.
And
I was shown that, too. I actually was. And except for that, we can make a change, and I was shown that. That God does not destroy what he has created and thought was good, which was the earth. He created it, and he called it good. He will cleanse it, purify it. Will happen.
Same word they used, actually, purification.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Yeah, purify.
Okay, they will purify it. It has to go through the cleansing. It has to go through the purification. And that is going to happen. That purification and cleansing can come in two ways. Number one, it can come by the fire and destruction of the volcanoes. It can come by the cleansing of the floods. It can come by the purification of the blowing winds. It can come in all of those ways. Or it can come by our change of attitude and that if we raise our vibrations. And this can all happen through the power of prayer. And because prayer, again, going back to the spoken word being the most powerful thing on this earth, besides love.
Is the power of prayer, in your opinion,
mm-hmm.
an actual response from God, or an effect on the collective itself?
The power of prayer is actually something that, you know, in the Bible it says, go into your closets to pray.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And some people have literally thought, and I've taken polls on this during my speaking engagements, and found that some people literally go into their closets to pray. They take it literally.
Well, I understand that prayer is most effective when your mind is quiet, so it just may be a place you go where it's quiet. Betty, hold on. We're at a break here, so we'll pick this up on the other side. How about the rest of you? The power of prayer. Answered by God, or simply inserted into the collective unconscious. We'll be back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999. Radio Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired September 8th, 1999.
Good morning, everybody. Betty Eady is here, and she'll be here throughout the hour.
Now we take you back to the night of September 8th, 1999, on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
All right, back now to Betty Eady. Welcome back, Betty.
Thank you.
So many people want to talk to you. I'm getting also a lot of faxes, Betty. Please, for example, ask Betty about the creatures that came alongside her hospital bed after she returned from heaven. Who or what were they, and where did they come from, and what are they used for?
When I came back to my hospital bed after the experience, five demons came into the room. I could see them very clearly. And as they were approaching me, a dome of light came down over my entire body, protecting me from them. Even as I'm telling you now about this, Art, I can close my eyes and visualize those creatures because they were so frightening looking. And they crawled on this dome of light, scratching, growling, carrying on in very vicious way. As that was happening to me, the three guardian angels that were there with me told me that I was shown this because I needed to know that I would be protected here upon this earth, and that Satan was very angry that I came back, and that he had sent these demons to destroy me. But that would not happen. I've reflected on this time and time and time again.
I bet you have.
And I thank God every day that I have this dome of protection, because as I've thought about the experience, as I have tried to glean every ounce of knowledge from it, I can only imagine these demons then as being demons of my own creation, because I know that each one of us, we have things that we allow in our space. We allow things that bring us down, pull us down, that tear at us, beat at us.
Yes.
They are our creation because they don't exist. They are an illusion, actually, because they don't really exist except in our minds. We allow them there. We place them there. And, I thought of this as well, there simply are negative energies upon this earth. And we talk about the bad people, the more than bad people, the absolutely evil people that exist upon this earth.
Oh, yes.
Energy of like energy attracts. And so if you are an evil person, say, and because of the energy, and people, you've probably heard people talk about auras, and some people don't like to hear the word because they tag you as New Age, and so that shuts all the doors of
their expanded
knowledge. And so I prefer to call it energy field, or you can simply call it, if you don't even like that, call it presence. It doesn't matter. It exists. That energy field around each one of us attracts like energy. And so if you are a loving person, you attract love. If you are a hateful person, you actually attract that energy to you. Evil people attract evil things to them.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that is done upon this earth that is of an evil nature leaves an energy. This is how we get haunted houses. This is why there are chills that run up and down people's spine when they go by someplace that someone was killed horrendously. That energy is still left there. It is there. It's like a blueprint.
Well, I was going to ask. My question would be, is that some kind of echo of what happened?
Yes.
As opposed to some poor soul actually trapped on Earth? That's always the big question with ghosts.
Yes, it can actually be both. because that energy is there. There are some people who are trapped here only in that they are so locked to the earth that their energy of their earthly self draws them and keeps them here. It kind of goes, you might even say, like people that are dying and they have a room full of loved ones, and the loved ones, because of their love for the person dying, they literally hold them to their mortal self. As soon as the loved ones decide to take a break and go out for dinner or coffee break or whatever they're doing, that loved one dies. And then those coming back have this horrendous guilt because they left the room. And they wonder why that loved one left while they were gone. It's because they were drawn to stay. And this happens. But this other energy is what could, is you could attach Satan to. Because these can take on, this negative energy can take on life form.
Phew. All right.
It's very deep.
I've never heard that story before.
Yes, it does. It takes on an energy of its own, and it's usually the energy that people give it.
All right. All right. Very quickly, Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Betty Eady. Hi.
Hi, this is Connie from the San Joaquin Valley.
Connie, you're going to have to yell at us.
I'm sorry. This is Connie from the San Joaquin Valley.
Right.
Betty, I read your book many years ago, and it really did impress me. There was something that you said earlier, though, that we were spirits that came from God and that we're here to get our spirits ready to go back to meet Him. And I was curious, if we were a spirit with God, why do we have to get our spirit ready again to go back to meet Him once we already knew Him?
I probably said something similar to that. And what I mean by that is that we are spirits that came here to develop and by expressing our love for one another.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, as the earth is going through all of its change, the most important thing to me, for each one of us to do, if we are not going to make this earthly change, the total change, the energy of the world change by our collective interest in raising our moral standards and all of our other standards as high as we possibly can get them, then we must prepare our souls to meet God, because that is, of course, going to happen. And I would prefer to be spiritually ready to go back home where I originated, where you originated, than I would to spend all of my time preparing physically to die or to remain here on Earth. You see what I'm saying?
I think I understand.
Okay, it's more important to me to be ready for spiritually than it is to be ready physically for anything.
You know, Betty, there's a scripture in the Bible and I believe it was Jesus himself that said it, that all spirit goes back to the Father who gave it.
Yes,
it
does.
A lot of people don't realize that are Christians, but that has always been a scripture that really has made me stop and question a lot of things.
That's right.
Especially about salvation.
That's right.
That's
given in another place, incidentally, and that is that the good shepherd would leave the 99 sheep and go for the one lost sheep. It states very clearly that God, you know, anyone that thinks that God, who is a mighty, powerful being, is going to lose one of his creation to Satan, just simply don't understand who God is.
But again, you know, it circles back to our argument about, not exactly an argument, but a discussion about people who will, in fact, judge themselves. Now, there may not be a Satan as such, or
right.
His operative area may be down here on Earth. I don't know. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I know there's evil here.
Yes, there is evil.
So, while you may return to the source,
it may take a while. It may take a while for you to have that dark veil removed from your own mind, your own eyes.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Betty Eady. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Am I loud enough for you?
Yes, you are. You're doing fine. Where are you?
Heckville, Texas.
Okay.
Mm. Hi.
Go right ahead.
Your book is I've only read your first one, but it was so comfortable and clear.
Thank you.
I appreciated that very much. I haven't been as far as you have. I've been in the tunnel where that wonderful feeling is, you know, that that you were describing, the loving.
Oh, yes, all the love.
Okay. I didn't get as far as you did, so I got that far, and then I had to come back, and I'm going, wait a minute. I do not want to come, like, I really didn't want to come back. And
No, you don't.
I'm trying to figure out, okay, what am I supposed to do now? Like, it's been a long time since that happened. I still haven't figured out what I'm supposed to do in the meantime while I'm waiting.
But it's interesting that you know that you're supposed to do something.
Well, I wish I knew what.
Yes.
Really, that's bugging me to death.
Yeah, and, you know, most people that have this, even the experience that you just had, once you enter that love, you know that there is something, a mission that you are to perform. You know, the interesting part about this is that God doesn't necessarily let us know what it is, because just existing upon this earth and continuing to be guided by the Spirit, if you want to call it that, you will be directed to perform your mission.
Oh, that's a relief.
Yes, and so quit worrying about it. Just live the very best life that you can, and He will direct you right to it.
And how does He want us to talk with Him while we're down here?
Just like you're talking to me.
It's so much easier up there.
Just like you're talking to me.
Oh, cool.
You don't have to have a formal prayer. It can be just in your heart. Many people have just cried out to God, like, oh, God, help me, in moments of terror, and He has been there. All you need is a desire to have Him by your side and His will to be done, and it will be done.
Oh, it's that easy.
It's very easy. We make it complex. We make it very complex.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, ma'am.
Thanks for letting her go this far.
You bet.
With us.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Sure. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Betty Eady. Hi.
Hi. Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hi, I love your show.
Thank you.
I have a quick comment and a question for her. Betty said, some people said they saw Elizabeth. Elizabeth happened to be Jesus Christ's grandmother, Mary's mother. And as far as believing in Jesus Christ, over 50% of people on earth believe in Him, because 1.5 billion of Muslims believe in Him.
That's wonderful.
And, yeah, you see, a lot of Christians don't know this.
No, they don't. I didn't know.
Yeah, we believe that He is the Messiah. We believe that He is the Word of God. We believe in His miraculous birth. We believe in Virgin Mary. But nobody knows this.
But how did you learn about Elizabeth? I mean, that fascinates me.
Because it's in the Holy Quran, and I was going to suggest you to read the Holy Quran, and
wow,
whatever you saw up there is in the Quran.
Is that right?
Yes, it says the Lord of the worlds, the world that God talks about, which we call Him Allah. He talks about all the worlds other than earth. And the message that He brought on this earth was gone to those planets too. The planet that there are beings in it, not the lifeless planet that we see up here.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes, please. And the concept of hell and heaven, it's like the Christian. We believe in heaven
mm-hmm.
and hell. And whoever have a good deeds and believe in oneness of God will
right.
go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever is evil will be an intimate of the Satan. We call it Satan. Which,
mm-hmm.
same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my question is, has any Muslims called you and asked you or told you that they had the same dream or NDE, near-death experience?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yes, they have.
Oh.
Absolutely. I have heard from just about every faith, including yoga, which I practice yoga in that I use it to keep my weight down as an exercise, but I never knew it to be a religion. And so I was quite surprised when I started to receive all these books and I learned that that was a religion. So I've heard from just about every belief. I don't know what everyone believes, just as I didn't know that, you included Christ.
Oh, yes.
I have just learned, actually, that the Native Americans, and I learned this from some of the Native Canadians, that their legends include Christ.
Oh.
And so there's a lot more about Christ than what we know.
Oh, yes. You see, it's an article of faith to believe in all the messengers, including Jesus Christ.
Right.
Otherwise, you are not a Muslim. By the way, Muslim means submission to God. Submit your will to will of God.
That's beautiful.
For example, in the morning when we wake up, we thank God for being, giving that spirit back to us, that we get up and we thank him for where we are and what we are.
All right. We are,
so
appreciate it, sir. And you know, again, I had one of the originators of the entire remote viewing program for the United States CIA on the air last night, Betty.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that one of the requirements for doing what he does is the complete sublimation of the ego.
Mm.
Translate, will, whatever.
Right.
The ego. In other words, you've got to totally let go of that.
So difficult.
That's exactly, that was exactly what I said to him, as a matter of fact.
Well,
easy to talk about, hard to do.
We live in the ego. This is what keeps us, gets us up in the morning and keeps us going. But yes, I do understand what he's talking about.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Betty Eady. Hi.
Hi there. This is Walter from West Virginia.
Yes, sir.
Question here. I'm a non-believer. Totally, you know, doesn't exist for me.
God does not exist.
No, sir.
You're an atheist.
I'm an order and chaos man.
All right.
You can take that for what it's worth. Question. Hypothetically, say an alien race lands on the planet.
Yes.
And comes down. First question, as in contact, would probably be, do you believe in God, and what is your concept of God? What if their answer was, oh, yes, your local deity. Everybody has one.
Well, then I imagine that would be interpreted in many ways by many people. In other words, many would consider it to be an absolute confirmation of the existence of a central creative force. Others would say, oh, my God, everything I've believed is wrong. So you'd get what you said you were, sir, order and chaos.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my wife has one comment for you about your book.
Mm-hmm.
She liked Betty's book. On your book art, The Art of Talk,
yes.
She thinks you need another fly or dust cover. She says the picture on the front makes you look like Stephen King.
You know, a lot of people have said that to me. That I look like Stephen King. Do I really?
Yes, sir.
Well, I can't help it. It's me. Thank you very much. I guess there's worse things to have happen to you. Wild card line, you're on the air with Betty Eady. Hello.
KQMS, Redding, California.
Well, hello there.
Hi.
Should I tell Betty who you are? And why we call you 10?
Do you have enough time?
Yeah.
I guess.
This young lady, one night, Betty, you'll be an interesting person to actually run this by.
Okay.
One night years ago, this young lady called me from, she lives in Redding, California,
mm-hmm.
near the Redding Ripple, what I call the Redding Ripple. Interesting, considering your book title. And I was running a survey that I thought never had been done in the history of radio before, and I really don't think it has. And I was asking people, of the Ten Commandments, how many have you broken? And it was a very fascinating show, actually, because I don't think anybody ever really asked that question before. But there were a few, a very few, of which this young lady was one, who said all 10. And ever since that time, I have called her affectionately 10.
Hmm.
So she has transgressed every single last commandment.
Wow.
So, Ten, what's your question?
My question is, do you think witches will go to heaven?
I think that everyone will go to heaven. Now, I was shown that there are various degrees of knowledge or understanding and of love there. In other words, whatever level that we have obtained here on Earth, we will acquire there.
Uh-huh.
And we will continue, just sort of like going to college where you graduate from one course and you go on to another. So there are many levels.
Betty, hold on a moment. And hey there, witchy woman.
Yeah?
Can you hang on through the break? Because really,
yes, I can.
That's an extremely interesting question that you have asked.
I'll hold.
I think. All right, good. you stay right where you are, and I will try and bring up, here it is, what I had in mind to sort of move out of this half hour with. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Betty Eady, and her latest book is The Ripple Effect. You should go pick it up and read it.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999. Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight's an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 8th, 1999.
All I can say is I hope we're living up to their expectations these days.
Now we take you back to the night of September 8th, 1999 on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
And once again, going into the final segment, here is Betty Eady. How are you holding up, Betty?
Actually, I'm doing quite well, thank you.
All right, well, it's getting late.
Uh-huh.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Betty Eady. Good morning.
Morning, this is Ben in El Paso.
El Paso, Texas. Yes, sir.
Right, interesting show. Miss Eady, this is a question, I don't know how to phrase it. I've been thinking about it all night, trying to get in.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way you do as far as spirituality. Do you think that there are people here that have not experienced near-death experiences who are still capable to be in touch with a supreme being?
Oh, absolutely. You don't have to have a near-death experience to experience God. I mean, you can simply have a spiritual experience. Or I don't know how many people know this, but at nighttime when we sleep, this is when our spirit is in contact with God. And during the night hours, when we have dreams, and it's always good to keep a dream book because our connections are there. And often we are shown things, given premonitions. Sometimes we are just shown things symbolically so that we can get in touch with what's happening to our life. You don't have to study this in order to progress in life, though, because your subconscious mind holds this, and it also... your spirit using that redirects your path.
Definitely. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You know, these things are very important, and when I talk about preparing the spirit, I certainly would emphasize also that we do need to prepare for these times.
Yes, we do.
And this food that you're talking about, I actually know that it is very good. So
do I.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And believe me, I do have my supply.
That's good, and that's interesting to hear from somebody who emphasizes spiritual aspects so much, which I know you do. Mm-hmm. You don't ignore the other.
Well, I look at it this way, Art. Prepare to live and prepare to die, because if you live on this earth, you may have to aid other people. Not all people are going to have their food. I cannot imagine living in my neighborhood and knowing that my neighbors are not prepared and not have enough for them too. And so I always store extra, just in case. That my house has to be a place of refuge.
An interesting question for you, Betty, and you need not answer this, but I've asked it of people like Gary North and others. And it is, you have saved some extra food for others, which is fine, but at some point, were that to be gone, and the others kept coming, and it came down to the supplies for your family or the people who were knocking on the door, what would you do?
And you know what? I try not to go to this conversation because I was actually shown a couple of different ways that this could go. One way is horror. And the other way is the way that I hope that this goes. What I was shown, I actually saw a large white truck that were coming to homes and picking up the food and taking them to places like schools and churches, and they were keeping the food there for people in that neighborhood. The other that I saw was actually people killing for the food. And so it's my prayer that we use this other method. I guess each one of our homes have to store and stock water and food because we don't know what streets are going to be totally destroyed.
That's right.
In and out or whatever. And being here in Seattle, I-5 is just about in, and 90 are the only two main roads. Food would be very difficult to bring to Seattle area.
Yeah, any trucker out there, and there's a million of them right now, could tell you if the trucking stopped, virtually the food would stop.
Exactly. So these each home is actually a storehouse for food, and I think that collecting it and taking it to a place and dividing it up amongst the people there is the best idea. Mm-hmm. The other way is chaos and murder, and I wouldn't want to see that. I would give my food up, to tell you quite honestly.
All right, that's a good answer. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Betty Eady. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. I've got a couple of things. I wrote you an email just a minute ago. I was like, well, I'd like him to read it, but he'll probably never see it, so I was really surprised.
I will see it. I will see it, sir.
But I think this is something that you that I should bring up, because
go ahead.
It's an interesting point. And I do have two other quick questions after that.
All right.
This is what I wrote. I'm calling from Atlanta.
Yes, sir.
I said, hey, Art, I think that I have the answer or the solution to change the world. It's only the choice of everyone. This is only one way that the world as a whole, they can change. It has to be everyone's choice. Everyone has to encounter an event that will take effect the way that we feel about each other as a whole, and this event can be something which will scare the world. And Y2K could be a very good example, but
could be.
There are different ways that this can happen. One is if a force or something that is out of this world were to encounter us nationwide, and you know where I'm going with this. Let's say if we were invaded by something or someone else, this would put a major impact on the world where we would have to come together and forget like everything about our problems, our differences, because we would be
confused. Yeah, I know. We'd just be transferring, though, our aggression from against each other to a common defense to kill
I think,
till the little green guy is coming in.
Well,
Ronald Reagan made some very interesting comments about that.
Yeah. Well,
how it would be unifying, why if they came down it would be unifying, we'd have to have a common defense and all that.
And I think that's true, but
I'm not sure that's the kind of spiritual growth Betty's talking about.
Right. Well, I'm not necessarily saying, I'm just using this as an example, I'm not necessarily saying that we would have to fight against something. I mean, it wouldn't have to be destruction. It just would be something that have to be something we couldn't explain that would make everybody be curious.
I understand.
And then forget everything else.
Right.
But I had a story I wanted to tell Betty real quick. And I believe everything I've been listening tonight, and I believe everything she's been saying.
Oh,
I've never had one of these near-death experiences. But I've always believed very similar things that she's been talking about, and I don't know why. It's just a natural thing for me. But my mom had cancer. She got cancer back in November of last year,
mm-hmm.
And it was really hard for me to take because I live away from my family. I moved away. I live at least 600 or so miles away, and I was very close to my mom, but she told me that she totally knew she could get through it, and she had faith. And she just told me that if you have a positive outlook on things, and if you believe that you can defeat anything that you want, and she prayed and prayed and prayed. And I tell you, she had this cancer that was probably one of the worst kinds, and she went through some of the hardest and harshest treatments, and not one time during this whole time did she suffer. Did she ever get sick? Did she ever feel bad? She might have felt tired or something, but people couldn't understand this. And less than 6 months, I would say it was less than 6 months, it is 100% gone.
All right, well, what you have just said is not as unusual as you think it is. The power of our mind or the power of prayer, depending on how you want to look at this, can in fact do things that are utterly inexplicable. The doctors, scientists, they shake their heads and they don't understand. There's a lot of that, isn't there, Betty?
Absolutely. In fact, there's one doctor that goes about, he wrote a book about the power of that type of thing, the power of the mind or the power of prayer, as you just said. And what that equals, they found out, they experimented, and they found this group of doctors, and they found that what the prayer was love.
One thing on the doubtful side of this would be that in excess of 50% of ills that are complained about by people are capable of being cured with placebos.
Right.
Not sure where that leaves us exactly. But
well, that takes them to their belief. If they believe the pill's going
to
work, it will work.
It works.
So it comes down to your belief system.
Mm-hmm.
But not to leave people feeling bad, those that have cancer that are not going to be cured, because many people say, I have faith in God, I believe, I pray, I do all these wonderful things, and still my body is being destroyed by this disease.
That's right.
That is absolutely something that I think that all of us have to come to accept, and that is that we are all born terminal. We will all die. I had a woman call me and say she had 6 months to live because the doctors had diagnosed her with cancer, and they said 6 months.
Right.
And I said, well, I don't know that I have that long. I could walk out into the
That's street. Always my answer, too.
Right.
People, in a way, are blessed with that time.
That's right.
As opposed to those of us who walk in front of Mack trucks, and
you
that's
bet.
It, right?
You bet. And so you have to go back to just live now. I mean, this is all we really have is right now. And before we came here to this earth anyway, we chose the time that we would be here. We knew that we would be here for a certain length of time. And we also, and I know this is going to sound absolutely astounding, but we also chose the way that we would leave, or our possible way of leaving. And often these ways of leaving is through illness. And that illness can be a tremendous blessing or a lesson to those that we are leaving, and even through the very last moments. And this is why I do not believe in Jevorkian's method of exiting people, because that is almost like suicide. It's taking your life before its natural time. And so we live, we endure to the end.
Yes, my wife has preached to me endlessly about this. I used to have the view that if I were in the end stages of a fatal disease that was racking me with pain, mm-hmm. that I could take my life. I could understand the rationale of that.
Right.
Why live out these last days, weeks, months, whatever it's going to be, of intense, horrible, twitching pain? And my wife has always said, oh, no, no, no. This, you play out the hand you're dealt. That's what you're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
You agree with that?
Absolutely, I do. I have been at the bedside of many, many people who were dying. They were there with their relatives. And sometimes, even to the, almost to the last breath, that person dying will say something that will profoundly change a member's of the family's life.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just to say, I love you, or forgive me. You just have to endure everything to the very end.
I've come to believe that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Betty Eady. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
My name's Dan. I'm from Milwaukee.
Hi, Dan.
And I agree with everything Betty was saying. I know several years ago I came upon the realization that any of the things that people thought they were imagining might have their mind controlling it, you know. And that I thought that I might have lived somewhere else before, but then I suddenly realized when I found out more information, my grandfather had lived back in that area at one time, and I thought, gee, maybe that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I inherited some of his memory or feeling or somehow. Like he had a mule kick him in the back when he was in the service. He was in the Civil War, and he took care of mules. And my lower back is filled with arthritis. And I'm a truck driver, so I run all over the road. And of course, that doesn't help my back, but that's okay. And
but it probably feels like a mule kicked you.
Oh, sure it does. At times it does, and at times it doesn't.
You see, what you're saying is so absolutely true. And if you were to check your family tree, if you could even get some records, you will find that your signature is going to perfectly match with someone in your past or your great-grandfather or great-grandmother or someone you are going to perfectly match.
Well, now that's very interesting.
Oh, yes, it is. I've done this. And so we do carry around cell memories of our relatives.
Sure.
And so this is very powerful. And an important thing for people that are where horrible things have happened to them, like women who have been raped as young children, they carry this pain within them. This is passed on and on and on. But those who understand cellular memory, you can stop that by not passing it on within your cells, by actually doing the visualization and taking that and cleansing it from your body. It's a very interesting process, but it can be done.
Now, would you have to do that through a psychiatrist or something
not at all. It's just your mind.
Just our mind, because we control it all by ourselves.
You bet. Absolutely. And this is going to be a very powerful method that will be used in the future to heal, because we won't necessarily have everything that we have right now these days should all of this devastation happen.
Yeah, we may be looking at a very different world.
We're going to look at a whole new world.
We sure have raced through this program. You have done a wonderful job, Betty.
Well, it's been wonderful being here with you, Art.
The Ripple Effect is your latest book. Will be available shortly in bookstores.
On the 27th this month.
On the 27th. In the meantime, people can probably go. Can they go to Amazon.com and order it?
They can order it at Amazon.com. Actually, Amazon can give them a 30% discount.
That's what I had heard.
Yes, they can. Or they can go to my website. And because we cannot give that 30%, obvious reason, I'm self-publishing, and it's cost a tremendous amount of money.
Oh, yes.
But what I offer them instead is I don't know, one of those book plates with my autograph on it.
Oh.
I would really prefer, if they wanted the book, to go to Amazon. I love Amazon because they do give the discounts.
I know. I wonder what's going to happen to bookstores, don't you?
Well, it's going to ruin them. And I think it's going to hurt the publishers, too, because there's no way you can give that kind of a discount.
The only thing sure is change and taxes and death.
Absolutely.
Stuff. All right, Betty, thank you so much.
Oh, and thank you, Art. It's been my pleasure.
Good night.
Good night now.
That's Betty Eady, folks. Tomorrow night, Gordon Cooper is going to be here, the astronaut. Gordon Cooper. It'll be the first time he's ever been on this program, and I think you'll find it, to say the least, very, very informative. Well, that's it for tonight. I'm Art Bell from the high desert. Night all.